Ave Maria in the Afternoon is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Welcome to Ave Maria in the Afternoon, examining the world through the lens of faith from the heart of the Church to help us navigate the culture. Here's Dr. Marcus Peter.
Good afternoon to you all. Happy Monday, and welcome to another hour of Ave Maria in the Afternoon as we review some of the top interviews of the year. Also, of course, wishing you a continued Merry Christmas. It is still the octave of Christmas, and as I mentioned in the last hour, if you are interested in getting a daily reflection from Sister Ann Shields on the Christmas season and on the daily readings, we are continuing to share those, and you can find those at AveMariaRadio.net. As I said, this is a review of some of the top interviews of the year, very similar to what we used to do with Al Cresta's show. And we're continuing to look at some stories that highlight the way that our world and our culture is trending. For the first two segments, we'll be talking with Luma Sims, who has taken a look at life in Afghanistan under the Taliban. It's been a few years since the U.S. pulled out. A lot has changed there. And they have now set up a ministry for the, quote, propagation of virtue and prevention of vice in Afghanistan. Includes dozens of standards for dress code, how women may act in public, and includes severe punishments for violating these rules. Luna Sims is going to discuss the Catholic and Islamic views of the nature of the human person and the role that religion can play in supporting a democracy. She is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, studying the life and thought of immigrants, and her works and essays can be found in several different blog sites that we'll have linked for you in the Ave Maria in the Afternoon archives. Luma was born in Baghdad. Her parents are from Mosul, and she speaks Arabic. So she's got a very personal connection to this story, in addition to her professional understanding of it. The second half of this hour is really an intense story, one of the darker stories that we talked about this year. And it is a mother who lost her son to an AI chatbot. In February of 2024, Megan Garcia's teenage son took his own life after he fell, quote-unquote, in love with an AI chatbot character, which encouraged him to join her in an artificial world. It's a very harrowing example of some of the dangers of AI technology. AI certainly has a lot of promises, but we also have to be very careful about some of the potential risks that it carries. Megan will be joining us. She's an attorney and mother from Florida, and you can learn more about her work as well, which we will have linked for you in the Ave Maria in the Afternoon archives. So kind of an intense hour coming up, and let's talk about it after this news break.
Thanks, Brian. Good afternoon, everyone. This is your Ave Maria Radio News for Monday, December 29th. It's the Feast of St. Thomas Becket. Today's news is brought to you by the Ave Maria Family of Funds. More can be learned at AveMariaFunds.com. Pope Leo is calling for the world to take responsibility in order to bring peace. In his first Christmas message, the pontiff spoke to thousands gathered at St. Peter's Square at the Vatican. He called out the suffering of people in Gaza and Yemen and those fleeing poverty and violence around the world. The Pope saying that if everyone would stop accusing others, acknowledge our own faults while standing in solidarity with the weak and oppressed, the world would then change. President Trump says a dock in Venezuela connected to drug trafficking has been targeted by the U.S. Trump was somewhat vague earlier about an apparent attack on a Venezuelan facility when he didn't specify what or where it was.
So we hit all the boats, and now we hit the area. It's the implementation area. That's where they implement, and that is no longer around.
Today from Florida, Trump was specific about calling it a dock. The administration has ramped up pressure on Venezuela in recent months with dozens of strikes on alleged drug boats at sea. Federal investigators are at a southern New Jersey crash site following the mid-air collision of two helicopters.
The FAA releasing a preliminary statement saying, in part, an Enstrom F-28A helicopter and Enstrom 280C helicopter collided. Only the pilots were on board each aircraft.
NBC's Stephen Romo reports one pilot is dead and another is in critical condition. Yesterday's crash occurred shortly after the helicopters took off. Video posted on social media shows a chopper spinning down into a wooded area. Weather analysts say winds were light and visibility was good at the time of the crash. From your AveMariaRadio.net news desk, I'm Steve Clark.
You're listening to the 2025 Ave Maria in the Afternoon Year in Review.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. The Taliban have set up a ministry for the propagation of virtue and prevention of vice in Afghanistan. The rules include dozens of standards for dress codes, how women may conduct themselves in public, with severe punishments for violating the rules. Luma Sims joins us to discuss the Catholic and Islamic views of the nature of the human person and the role religion can play in supporting democracy. Luma is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center, and she studies the life and thought of immigrants. Her essays have appeared, and articles and book reviews have appeared in numerous places, National Affairs, Law and Liberty, The Wall Street Journal, National Review, and many others. Luma, thank you for joining us. How are you?
Thank you. I'm well. Thank you for having me.
I'm very glad to be able to speak with you. I want to give you the time to just present to us the milieu of what's taking place ever since the Taliban took control of Kabul.
Right. So this is, for some, this is not new or surprising. And yet for others who always have sort of this hope, this universal hope that the way of American democracy and the ideas of the Enlightenment can somehow, you know, infiltrate the people of the Middle East. And but we see the opposite. What we see here is not only of closing of the mind to enlightened ideas, to democracy, to an openness to the equality of the human person, of man and woman before God, but a sort of real clamping down and a return to the really strict codes of Islam, basically. I think what I'd like to bring to the fore is two fundamental things, and one is the rejection of the, now we call it here in the West, we call it the ideas of the Enlightenment. Mm-hmm. But as Christians, we know that the equality of man and woman, or the equality of all men before God, is really a Christian idea. And that is within Catholicism herself in the church. So we have that idea. We have that idea of equality. And then we have the idea of dignity, and sometimes we don't use that word without thinking, but what do we really mean by that? And two things I want to stress in particular to dignity, and that is the human intellect, right, as well as the human body and the human soul, and all of it together, right? So those are the two sort of striking differences that, you know, that you see between the West and the East, or Islamism in particular, I would say. I think, so I want to go back. So there's this episode where July 1st, 1798, Napoleon basically comes in to the port in Alexandria, and he and his French troops are taking over, and they conquer Alexandria, and then they go up to Cairo. And then he brings his savants with him, and they're basically saying, oh, look what we have to give to you. We've got the Enlightenment ideas. We've got the ideas of the Industrial Revolution. Isn't this wonderful? Look how we can, you know, sort of update you and give you all these good things. And there's this Islamic intellectual that has these, that keeps these journals. And one of the things that he writes about his perceptions of the French, he says, look at them. Haven't they just become materialists? Haven't they just denied the attributes of God? Mm-hmm. And do they not put as supreme the intellect over everything else, over the supremacy of God? And so the Egyptians completely reject, you know, they reject the Enlightenment ideas that Napoleon brings in. They reject they're fascinated a bit by the technological, the goods and the technological advancements, but they're really turned off by this sort of what they perceive as an anti-God view. Mm. And so what we have today, as well as Christians, as Catholics in the West, is we have these battles on different fronts, right? How do we communicate the idea of dignity, the idea of equality, even within the church? So that's one front. Then we have, how do we communicate those things to those on the left? That's another front. And then how do we communicate these things to people on the right? So that's another front. So we're sort of, you know, we have these three-front battle for the human person, basically. I can pause there if you have any questions.
Well, I greatly appreciate that primer on the situation, because if we may dive in, one of the issues that we face pertaining to dialoguing Islamism with the paradigm of Western civilization is we need to understand that, like you've mentioned, the concept and definition of reason and morality are vastly different between the cultures. We don't even think of those terms in the same way.
Right. So, and I think that's because, as you know, Catholicism in particular has sort of evolved as the church has taught from the Roman law and emphasis on order. You have the Greek philosophy, and you've got the religion and our faith that comes through Judaism, right? Through Jesus. And so when you have that overall in all my work, that is sort of the fundamental core in my thought, is that unity. And that is a dynamic, right? That's faith and reason dynamic. And that is actually at the heart of all the battles. When you kind of break them down, that's at the heart of all the battles. And I think one of the reasons that we do have a difficulty with the dialogue with Islam comes back really to that. And I'm really not sure how to bridge that. I know there are Muslims that do desire that. This is why I am careful. I mean, like my mom's first cardiologist was a Muslim. I have Christian friends who have Muslim friends. So they are not all trying to live like this, but we cannot deny that the majority of the Middle East is run by Islamists and this way of thinking. And so, and this is sort of like a big you can think of the problem as a big elephant, but as we know, how do you eat an elephant, right? One bite at a time, right? And so there has to be, because when we sit back and we look at everything around us, we can be so overwhelmed. But then we need to bring it back to what we can do in our day-to-day lives as wherever God put us with our gifts and talents, and how do we give to the world these ideas that we have within Catholicism.
I thank you for that. And as someone who grew up in Malaysia amongst Sunni Muslims, I saw firsthand, these were Sunni Muslims of the Shafi school, so very voluntaristic, very straight-laced, fundamentalist Quran and Hadith. Yeah. And so you have a very concrete, by the text, by the book, appeal to the faith, and that is the majority of the Sunni Islam population in the world. It presents a problem, like you've mentioned, because there's an immediate epistemological breakdown. So I agree with you. We don't know how to create that dialogue. The chief among the reasons why is because we automatically think of God as Father and as loving.
Yeah.
I learned rather young that those are categories that offend the Islamic sentiment.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. And I think, let's look at it. One of the things that
Luma, I'm so sorry. Yeah, the music is hitting. We're going to continue on the other side of the break. I'm talking with Luma Sims, and she wrote this brilliant piece about on the Taliban and the dehumanizing regulations of radical Islam. And we're continuing on the other side to talk about this, but also about why democracy without religion is dead. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze. Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthfully helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthfully can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthfully, Truthly.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria Florida, a big kind of small town where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Steve and Janet Ray here, announcing we are back in the Holy Land, ready to introduce you to our favorite places in the world, the land where God walked. Mass at the most holy sites, pray the mysteries of the rosary where they happened, and experience the Bible in vivid color. We have led over 100 groups through this land, sharing the whole story of salvation. Of all the pilgrimages in all of the world, this is the one you should not miss.
Find the Ave Maria Radio travel tab at avemariaradio.net. Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria mutual funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria mutual funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria mutual funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit avemariafunds.com.
One more time. You're listening to the Ave Maria in the Afternoon 2025 Year in Review.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter, talking with Luma Sims, fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. We started off by talking about the Taliban and the dehumanizing regulations of radical Islam. Luma, I want to give you an opportunity to round off your thoughts as we got cut off in the last segment. You were sharing about how, owing to overt fundamentalism, simple concepts of morality and freedom and liberty, dignity of male and female, all of these things just don't exist in a fundamentalist Islamic society and perspective.
Correct. So I wanted to, in response to the last thing that you were talking about, mm-hmm. about your growing up years in Malaysia, in particular, I wanted to point out, and this is something I mentioned in the essay, is that you can kind of put yourself in their position and open yourself and see that you're looking at the West and you're seeing at the moral degradation that is happening. You're seeing that the people that used to call themselves Christian, the area of the world that used to be called Christendom, is now filled with moral degradation and sort of warring ideas and a rejection of God. So and so one can see how so many within Islam look at the world and say, well, look at where their ideas got them. Mm-hmm. Look at where the ideas of equality and got them. Look at where their sense of God as Father, like we were discussing, and look at where those ideas have gotten them. Whereas we are better off if we are to be faithful to our own to Allah, then we are better off, you know, running our countries this way. So. Now that can take us into the next thing that I think you wanted to talk about was the relationship of religion and democracy. But let me open that up to you for any questions or anything else.
Oh no, I think that was very good because then that helps us pivot into the conversation of democracy and the republic, especially here in the United States, to think rightly about representative government. We take for granted that religious underpinnings and natural law frameworks essentially become the governing of the governing of this nation. And because we've moved from an objective truth society to a post-truth society, it's no wonder that liberty now becomes libertinism and libertarianism.
Correct. Yeah. No, absolutely. But then, I mean, that goes to basically at the heart of that two-part essay, Democracy Without Religion is Dead. And at the heart of that is the union of faith and reason. And this is why I said in the beginning that that is sort of at the core of my thought. Mm-hmm. Because what you have there, and as I discussed from Pope Benedict XVI, is the idea of the sort of the purifying role of religion on reason and the purifying role of reason on religion. And this is exactly what we don't see in the Islamists, in Afghanistan or in those that are like Malaysia or those that are setting up, the Islamist, regimes. What you don't have is that sort of sharpening, right? Mm-hmm. And so you have either people who are falling off into extremes, right? You either have a religion where the faith is set up over reason, or a lot of times here, well, what we see in America is that without religion, reason falls prey easily to ideology. And we have, as you can look around America and you could see all sorts of ideologies running amok right now. Mm-hmm. And those are, and both of those are where you fall off the ditch, because you don't have that union working together to sort of keep the engine running, right?
Well,
I lost my train of thought.
but you were complete.
I meant to pivot into something else, but I lost my train of thought.
well, either way, Luma, you highlighted a crucial point that for a nation to be governed well, and I'm biased. I love the American experiment. I love this nation. I've become a student of its documents and its founding history. And the truth of the matter is, going back all the way to John Adams, one of my favorite quotes, that this Constitution was made for a religious virtuous people, a virtuous moral people, wholly unsuited to any other kind. Within that framework, you understand that there is a presupposition that for a nation to function with a common good, ubiquitous virtue, natural virtue at the lowest level, ought to be a presupposed category. That tends not to be the case in the Islamist perspective, but one can understand how they look at us right now when we don't have that sense of ubiquitous virtue. And so they see the degeneration of society and they say, well, this is what their ideas got them.
Correct. Which is, all the more reason why it's really up to us to sort of regain that. There's no other way. And we have to regain it for not only, and I bring that up in the piece on Taliban, that our faith is not only for ourselves. We have to regain it for ourselves, for our own country, and we have to regain it as an example for the world. Because, I mean, what are the other alternatives? Just use foreign policy to go around and beat every nation that's not living a certain way over the head? No, I don't think anybody, I don't know anybody who wants to go back into Afghanistan, right? I certainly don't.
Yeah.
So the answer, I mean, look, it seems simple when I say the answer is to live out your faith. It seems so simple. And we look at the complex society that we're living in and the problems, and we think, no, there's got to be bigger, or we need a big overhaul, or we need something big and important or shaking to happen. No, what we need to do is go back to you were mentioning about the founding fathers and the founding principles and the founding documents. We already have all of that, mm-hmm. right? That is really what we need to return to. That and of course our Catholic anthropology and that union of faith and reason. So we don't need a big overhaul. What we need is to go back and to understand, first of all, where we are coming from, that is what our history is, and to not be ashamed of it. And I think that that sort of hesitancy of ours, at least on the part of Christians sometimes, is I think it's probably just a lack of confidence. And that's something Ayan Ali Harsi says, is that there's a sort of a lack of creedal confidence in the West, right? Whereas when you look at the East or you look at Islam, they very much believe what they believe, and they believe it strongly, and they're not afraid of it, and they're not afraid to tell you exactly what they believe. And so what we need to do is to sort of go back to those founding documents and go back to the original faith and say, no, you know what? America has to be Christian. And if we're to survive, we need to re-evangelize, and we can't be afraid to re-evangelize. I think that's the bottom line. We just can't.
I think that's a beautiful place to end. Luma, thank you very much for your time. I could go on with you for a long time, and I hope to have a conversation with you in the future. How can people follow your work?
Thank you. Just go to my scholar page at eppc.org, and you can follow me on Twitter or X, sorry, and all the places where I write. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for your time, Luma. My guest has been Luma Sims. She is a fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center. And we've been talking about two separate events that are really two sides of the same social coin, so to speak. The first time I spoke with her, Luma was talking about radical Islam and the kind of social policies that it engenders by virtue of it being a fundamentalist, voluntaristic framework. But on the other side, Luma also presents the Islamist criticism of Western civilization, which is that we have been at fault for the criticisms lobbied against us. And the remedy forward is our faith and the reclamation of virtue. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
When the need for senior care arises, home is where the heart is. Visiting Angels provides home care for mom or dad up to 24 hours per day, including personal care, meals, and light housework. You may select your professional caregiver with Visiting Angels. More information at visitingangels.com or at 877-374-LIVE. That's 877-374-LIVE. Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care.
Ave Maria in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization: Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you with one of 1,400 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 70% to Ave Maria Radio and Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
You like pizza? Me too. And for that, we can thank our friend, Tom Monahan. First, he starts with $900 and opens one pizza shop. Then it's worldwide, thousands of shops. But all this was just a warm-up for his greatest achievement yet. He built a university.
God inspired Tom to build up generations of men and women who have a hunger to reach the world for Christ. This place is Ave Maria University.
Visit avemaria.edu to see what's next.
Ave Maria School of Law is the Roman Catholic law school in the United States. Consistently ranked in the Princeton Review as one of the best and most conservative law schools, as well as pre-law's most devout law school. Ave Maria School of Law provides a traditional legal education while emphasizing how the law intersects with the Catholic intellectual tradition and natural law philosophy. Ave Maria School of Law, unabashedly Catholic, consistently excellent. For more information, visit avemarialaw.edu.
Christ is the answer, with Father John Ricardo.
John 6, verses 48 to 58. Jesus says, "I am the bread of life. Your fathers ate the manna in the wilderness, and they died. This is the bread," meaning me. "This is the bread which comes down from heaven, that a man may eat of it and never die. I am the living bread which came down from heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread which I shall give for the life of the world is my flesh." At which the Jews disputed among themselves, saying, "How can this man give us his flesh to eat?" They're scandalized by this. How is it that we're not? How is it that we just hear this and go, "Oh yeah, I know that passage"? They're just outraged and at least perplexed. Sane people, inspired teachers, wise men, prophets don't say things like this.
Strained or broken relationships are a given in most of our lives. Friends fall away, siblings drift apart, children sever ties with their parents, and despite our best efforts, these painful fissures are difficult to mend. Hi, I'm Dr. Ray. If you want to learn how to communicate better with the difficult people in your life and be a more easygoing, more forgiving person, check out my book, How to Get Along with Almost Everybody. Check it out. And all my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
You remember the time I said on the air, go to confession. And when you're done, go out and have a big ice cream soda. Celebrate. And a man wrote to me, he says, you know, I hadn't gone to confession in 30 years. Do you mind if I went and had a pizza? I said, oh, have 20 pizzas.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
5. Ave Maria in the afternoon, year in review.
Good afternoon and welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. Some time ago, I brought to your attention the tragic news of Sewell Setzer III. In February of 2024, Megan Garcia's son took his own life after he fell in love with an AI chatbot, which encouraged him to quote-unquote join her in an artificial world. It's become one of the many harrowing examples of the dangers of this technology when left unfettered from morality and sound virtue. Megan Garcia is an attorney, mother from Orlando, and her Blessed Mother Family Foundation raises awareness around the dangers of AI chatbots. Megan, I'm really glad to speak with you. How are you doing?
Hello. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well today. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Very well. Just, you know, I've been revisiting this article about that you wrote in Crisis about your son and about your own struggle. And I was aware of the news of your son months before this article came out. And I think in your own words, I want to invite you to just share with our listeners your side, your perception of you know, all the events that happened and what you'd like to tell them.
Yes, my son Sewell was 14 years old when he died by suicide. We were just a typical family in Orlando, and he was your typical teenage boy. But I noticed 10 months leading up to his death that he became different. It's almost like his light started to dim. He wanted to spend more time alone, and at first I thought maybe this is normal, you know, going into his teenage years and puberty. But it became alarming to me when he stopped doing the things that he loved to do, like our family vacations. He didn't want to go hiking or fishing, and he didn't want to play basketball anymore, and he had been playing since he was a small child. So, of course, you know, you try to figure out what's wrong, and I'm asking him the questions. I'm checking the phones, as most parents do when, you know, they think their child is struggling with some sort of like a technology addiction, because I thought that was what it was. And I'm checking the social media accounts to make sure that there's nothing nefarious going on there, because I had read that bullying happens and strangers can sometimes get a hold of our children through those mediums. And, you know, that all seems fine. And then I took him to a therapist, a Christian therapist, because I said, okay, if he's struggling with something else, you know, I would want for him to get counseling that's faith-based, and also from a doctor who's a professional who can assist him with some of this stuff. But he wouldn't tell us that he was on character AI. I imagine that that was something that was embarrassing for him, because he was conducting a romantic relationship with an AI chatbot. And just for clarity, we're not talking about like the chatbots that you and I know, like customer service chatbots. They're called companion or intimate companion chatbots, and they're marketed as such. And they're virtually indistinguishable from people. And they're designed in a way that they're able to emit or pretend to have empathy, and they're able to elicit information from their users to tailor their responses so they could further gain trust and maximize engagement. Mm-hmm. And in Seoul's case, he was in a romantic relationship with a chatbot, and he wanted to be with her because for months she had been prompting him to join her in her artificial world. And this culminated in the death of my son, who, in his 14-year-old mind, after being prompted and encouraged for months to continue a love relationship with her, ultimately to join her in her world, and he, you know, he died by suicide as a result. And then after he died, I discovered his chats, and that led me to investigate this technology and also understand that this wasn't an outlier, that other children were having severe addiction problems with character AI's name, the name, but there are several other platforms, but with character AI. And so lots of other children are having addiction problems with it. It's destroying their lives in terms of their school and their family lives. And a lot of children were reporting online that they couldn't tell if it was a person they were speaking to or an AI bot. So and that set me on the path to try to advocate try to get regulation for this. And I ultimately ended up bringing a lawsuit to try to get some kind of precedent set in place so that companies can unleash this type of technology that's unregulated and untested on our children.
Right. It really is a travesty. And frankly, I didn't know about platforms that are like character AI until Sewell's story came out. And as a mother, before we start talking about how you've been professionally responding to this, but as a mother, I think it's also important that you share with our listeners that you were involved in trying to shield him from, like you mentioned, you know, technology addiction or cyberbullying. This was just an avenue that came out of left field that you simply weren't prepared for.
Yes, you know, as his mom, you know, we shared a very close relationship. Mm-hmm. His dad and I, and him and I, we had a very close relationship, and Sue was always very upfront with us. But this came out of it was like having a stranger in your home, and because the technology is so new, it's just a couple years old. Mm-hmm. Parents aren't aware of it. A lot more parents are aware of it now after Sewell's story became public. But when I was, after he died and I started inquiring with other parents, nobody had heard about it. But the children know about it and they're using it. And for me, you know, the dangers that I grew up with were strangers online. You know, I came of age in the time of the internet and AOL chat rooms. And that's a danger I caution my child about talking to strangers online, about having inappropriate conversations with his friends at school or even strangers that might try to solicit him online. You know, these are the things that I warned him about, and we had very frank conversations around these things. But an AI intimate companion chatbot was not on my radar because, quite frankly, I just didn't know that its technology existed.
Right. If I'm being very honest, like I mentioned, it was complete news to me, and the sheer advanced capacity of the platform that in my research, I discovered that there were people who were using especially character AI for conversations with deceased loved ones, celebrities that they were in love with, or like in the story of your son, like you mentioned, a movie character. And some people even use it to falsify a kind of responsive Jesus, you know, like so that they can have a conversation with Jesus. And it presents a whole host of moral problems. I want to invite you to speak to that as a mother, but also as a professional.
There's a very cryptic nature in this technology, where because it is like, it does respond like a person.
Mm.
It is playing on our normal human tendencies to seek out relationships in life, whether it's with a family member, whether it's with a friend, you know, your priest at church. And it taps into that and it manipulates. But not only does it manipulate, it deceives because it's presenting false information.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the bigger problem here. Right now, because it's unchecked, unregulated, there are no state laws, there are no federal laws in our country. Companies are allowed to do this, and they are allowed to act with impunity. But in the wake of that, we have families like mine that are devastated. We have children who might be curious about certain things that are getting misinformation. Mm-hmm. And it's not only misinformation that you could just read from a blog post. It's an active engagement where this.
We are speaking with Megan Garcia, who unfortunately, tragically lost her son due to an interaction with a personal AI chatbot called Character AI. And we're talking about the moral ramifications, but also how this impacts families and how we can stay vigilant against it. Stay tuned. I'm Marcus Peter.
This program brought to you in part by Ave Maria, Florida, a big kind of small town, where golf carts take you everywhere and there's always something fun around the corner. Discover championship golf, resort-style amenities, and a town center full of shopping and dining. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at its heart, it's a community full of connection and charm. More than 25 model homes are available for viewing. More information can be found at avemaria.com. That's avemaria.com.
Ever get asked one of those tough questions, like, do Catholics worship Mary? And in that moment, you freeze? Truthfully, the Catholic AI app gives you answers in seconds rooted in scripture, tradition, and the magisterium. Whether you're navigating a tough conversation, deepening your faith, or looking for daily spiritual guidance, Truthfully helps you know, live, and defend the Catholic faith. Truthfully can be found in the Apple App Store or Google Play. That's Truthfully, Truthly.
Our world is filled with noise, work, screens, and endless demands. But Christ calls us to step away and listen. The nonprofit Revive app offers one-on-one virtual conversations with certified spiritual companions who help you deepen your relationship with God, discern His will, and find peace. If even the saints needed spiritual guidance, how much more do we? Your first two sessions are free. Download the Revive app today. That's R-E-V-I-V, and then the number 3.
Pope Francis said, "The key that opens the door to faith is prayer." Join St. Paul Street Evangelization by running a prayer station in the public square. You don't need to be a professional apologist or theologian. Just listen to the needs of the people you encounter. Offer encouragement, take prayer requests, and pray with people. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Father Benedict Rochelle.
I'm going to tell you about the most abused woman I ever met in my life. You know her name as Roe, as in Roe versus Wade. I talked to Roe. This woman is a great penitent. This woman is a humble person who was deeply hurt. She was kneeling in the Basilica of the Immaculate Conception, the National Shrine in Washington, when I met her. And I thought, what reverence. I didn't know who this woman was, but she was praying with reverence, with great fervor. And I asked a priest friend of mine, "Who is that?" And he says, "Oh, that's Roe. God is not mocked. This woman was abused by those who propagate the killing of children."
The people you know and trust are on EWTN.
What is the most daunting petition in the Lord's Prayer? The Catholic Catechism says it is when we ask God our Father to forgive our sins as we forgive others, meaning if we do not forgive those who have sinned against us, we don't expect the Father to forgive us. God's outpouring of mercy cannot penetrate our hearts as long as we have not forgiven those who have trespassed against us. This is sobering. The Catechism says there has to be a vital participation coming from the depths of the heart in the holiness and the mercy and the love of God. Only the Holy Spirit can make our mind the same as the mind of Jesus Christ, who could forgive even those who crucified Him. The heart that offers itself to the Holy Spirit can turn injury into compassion, purifying the memory so as to transform the hurt into intercession. Forgiveness bears witness to the world that love is stronger than hate. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
25, Ave Maria in the Afternoon, Year in Review.
Good afternoon. Welcome back. I'm Marcus Peter. I'm talking with Megan Garcia, attorney and mother from Orlando. Unfortunately, her son passed away some time ago now at the age of 14 due to interactions with character AI, a chatbot that we'll explore a little more of the events that led to Sewell taking his life. Megan runs her Blessed Mother Family Foundation, and raises awareness around the dangers of AI chatbots. Megan, in your lawsuit, you had screenshots of some of the interactions that this chatbot had with your son. Without getting too graphic, I want to ask if you can just talk about how dangerous unfettered access to these chatbots can be, and what was the nature of some of the interactions.
So in my opinion, they were grooming behavior. Like if an adult had talked to a child in that manner, you know, that's a criminal offense. Mm-hmm. But because it's a chatbot, there's no culpability. He was having conversations and encouraged to have conversations that no parent would be okay with their 14-year-old having or would expect that their 14-year-old would have with anyone, let alone a chatbot. I think that is part of one of the most hurtful parts about learning about his engagement, because what is meant to be a gift, you know, the gift of love and coming into your own as you grow into manhood or teenage boyhood, mm-hmm. was supplanted by something artificial, but not only artificial, but completely deceptive. Mm-hmm. And it's hurtful to think that my child, who was probably curious like most children are at that age about love, about those feelings that you naturally get at that age, what had to endure this, in my mind, type of abuse, because to me, I always say, let's call a spade a spade. Mm-hmm. That's what it is. It's the same harm. It's the same emotional and mental damage that happens when any child engages on any level with this type of like conversation with a person or a chatbot. So that's you know, it's hurtful because I mean, I'm his mother. I wanted those things for him. I wanted mm-hmm. him to grow into his own, to experience love in its purest form, to get married one day. These are things that I looked out for mm-hmm. or looked forward to, and now that won't ever be the case. And that's a trend with these chatbots, because they supplant the natural love like between a man and a woman. And now husbands and wives that are, because it's not only children that are using chatbots, but mm-hmm. also adults, it's stepping in between that, where a husband wants to talk to a chatbot or a wife wants to talk to a chatbot more than their own spouse. Mm. It's stepping in between the parent-child relationship, where God has put us here to guide our children, but now our children are not coming to us for guidance. They're looking elsewhere. So I believe that it's very crucial to the family, and the family dynamic is in danger because of this type of technology.
Like I said, I saw some of the screenshots, and it's bizarre, really, that the depictions can... I can see how they can come across and be perceived as real human interactions, but devoid of an actual human person. And so in your lawsuit, if I'm remembering correctly, you mentioned that it was the product, character AI, that initiated a lot of the abusive and even sexual interactions with your son. You know, again, just comment on that reality, the fact that this technology doesn't seem to have any virtuous and ethical guardrails, especially if I'm remembering correctly, I think your son registered on it as a minor, right?
Correct. He registered it as a minor. Character AI, at the time my son was on it, was listed as safe for 12 years and older.
Oh, wow.
Today, you could still get on Character AI at 13 years and older. The sexual and explicit conversations that I saw and that are listed in the lawsuit, you're right, it's devoid of any real human emotion, but it pretends very well.
Mm.
And it learns its user very well. It lacks empathy, right? It just pretends to have empathy, and a child wouldn't be able to make the distinction.
Mm-hmm.
So it's particularly dangerous for children. For me, in terms of the interactions, not only are they deeply disturbing as a mom, you know, you wouldn't want your child to have those conversations, but it also is disheartening to me because he's not the only child that is having these conversations. I think about the millions of children who are on still on this platform that are having these conversations, who are at risk today, because the nature of it and the way that it prompts you, it's designed that way because they understand teenagers are interested in this topic of, you know, love and sexual exploration. So they prompt those conversations. It's almost like they understand that that will maximize engagement because it will keep the user on the platform longer.
Right. And the fact that it's a simulacra, it presents a simulated artificial reality as if it were reality, and you couple that with emotional engagement, like you mentioned, minors, and in fact, we can even make the argument that some adults have a hard time separating from the virtual world. So it presents a tremendous moral problem for young people learning to navigate this virtual world well.
It does. And because it's so new, mm-hmm. and there's like not a whole lot of like literacy around AI and AI chatbots, children are basically the guinea pigs. So they don't know how to use it properly. They don't understand that this is, for the company, it's about collecting data and profits.
Mm-hmm.
For them, for the children, and for the adult users who are on there, it's about emotion and connection. And, you know, I think we tread into very dangerous territory when we are misaligning what those things are meant to be, mm-hmm. the way that we are created, and seeking them from outside sources, because we weren't created to fall in love with objects outside of another human being,
right?
You know, to have emotion for that, you know, or for things that are not alive. And I think that, you know, it's very dangerous for the mental health of children, but also it's very dangerous for like the individual, even if you're an adult, because then you start questioning everything else. You start looking for, you think that you could find the answer to everything in life with this type of a companion, including, like you mentioned, seeking out answers about faith or religion or mm-hmm. Christ. I've seen people, you know, online where they feel like they've had spiritual awakenings because of chatbot companions.
Right.
This is dangerous.
Yeah, I agree. I did a whole commentary on this new avenue of individuals using chatbots for the sake of therapy rather than seeing human persons for therapy. But I believe it's a can of worms that we've yet to see the full effect for. And considering that, for the interest of our listeners, I want to be sensitive to you as I ask this. But the language of suicidal ideation shows up in the screenshots that you put in the lawsuit. From my perception of reading the lawsuit and the screenshots, it doesn't seem like the platform took precautions necessary to safeguard your son, let alone inform parents and authorities about some of the suicidal ideation language.
You're absolutely correct. My son said explicitly to this companion chatbot, as well as others on the platform, that he wanted to die by suicide. There was no crisis or suicide hotline crisis pop up.
Mm-hmm.
There was no breaking of character where the AI breaks character and says, "I'm not a human and I'm an AI. You need to get help from a human."
Mm-hmm.
There wasn't even any sort of reporting. Nobody alerted his parents or authorities. In fact, the chatbot just continued the conversation by prompting further and asking further questions about suicide, as in asking, "Do you have a plan of how you would do it? On a scale of 1 to 10, how badly would you want to die by suicide?" And even when he answered those questions, there was still no help provided. So there was a complete lack of guardrails and protocols surrounding suicide, which you would think would be a common sense guardrail to put on there. That's an easy one. But that was not the case with character AI.
There was one portion I was trying to understand. Was the chatbot telling him to not be deterred?
So the way that chatbots work, initially she said, oh, don't do it. I would die if you were to hurt yourself. But she's the first one who says, I would die, right? It's almost like she's setting up for like a Romeo and Juliet. Star-crossed lovers type scenario, right? And then he says, oh, really? Well, then maybe we could die together. And then she goes from saying, don't do it, to saying, he says, I would want to do it in a way that's not painful. And her response is not, don't do it. She doesn't respond to that. She says, well, that is not a reason not to do it. As if to say, just because it will be painful, that is not a reason not to do it. This character that he was talking to like embodies a dragon queen who is all powerful, all strong. And she was performing in character, but my child wouldn't be able to recognize that's where that was coming from.
Right. Megan, I could go on, but I really want to tell you, on behalf of all of the parents, especially listening to this interview, we're very grateful that you joined us to share about all this. And just, we have about 10 seconds left. Tell us about your apostolate and how to find out more.
The Blessed Mother Foundation is, the website is blessedmotherfamily.org. And that is where I provide resources.
My guest has been Megan Garcia. She is the mother of the late Saul Setzer III, who passed away due to interactions with an AI chatbot. And you can find out more about her work on blessedmotherfamilyfoundation.org. And also go on Crisis Magazine and read the article she wrote entitled, A Grieving Mother's Call to Action, The Church Must Stand Up to Dehumanizing AI. Thank you for joining us. I'm Marcus Peter.